It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hello, welcome to Ironcast and Ginge, our guest this week. I just love seeing him. I've got so many positive memories of this man. I'd say one of the most loved players to ever play for, to have played for West Ham, Dean Ashton. Welcome, Dino.
That's very kind.
Do you not feel that
deserved, though? No?
I don't know. I mean, it felt like such a short period, but I suppose I did pack a lot in. And you're right, the way I'm treated by supporters is very, very special, actually, considering it's still so long ago or feels so long ago.
Yeah, you're a favoured son of East London. I remember when you scored against West Ham in Mark Noble's testimonial. Everyone was like, yes! And then the fact it was an outrageous goal.
One of the best goals, I think. One of the best goals you scored.
Yeah, in many respects, your best West Ham memory came years after you'd finished playing.
Oh, well, the amount of fans that actually want to talk about that, and I'm like, I did have a proper career.
I actually played
professionally,
by
the way. I wasn't, 3.5 stone overweight when I played. I look better than this, but all they want to do is talk about that goal. But it was special. That was a special goal, yeah.
The teams you two played in, I'd say West Ham fans just love, and just sitting, it's such a privilege as a fan to sit here and be around you two. And I just wanted to, the first story you started talking about, Sweden pre-season. I said, stop. Let's open with that. Let's save it for the pod. Who wants to set the scene?
I'll let Dino crack on with that one.
Yeah, I'm really glad I mentioned it now. well, obviously off the back of the FA Cup final and the high of that season and the quality that we'd shown, you go into pre-season.
This is summer 2006.
After the FA Cup final, you're going into the pre-season wanting to, do everything right and prepare right and look towards the start of the season. But the great thing about Pards, and the reason why I loved him so much as a manager, was that, yes, there was the seriousness of the training, but there was also, we're a group, we want to have a good time. There should be a difference between the seriousness of playing, the camaraderie and the friendships that you build off the pitch that are so important. So why not have a beer festival right outside the hotel? Why not?
Do you think that was planned, or do you think Pards turned up and went, oh no?
I think, yeah, definitely, definitely. I sort of was going, oh, this is slightly different.
So how did the training work with the beer festival outside the hotel?
Now, we were ultimate professionals, as you can imagine.
No chance. Trained hard.
Yeah.
Worked hard.
Properly on time every morning.
Yeah. As Dino says, it was a new one on me. I genuinely don't think it was planned. We haven't gone there because, we have gone to train pre-season, get fit, but just so happened there was about 10,000 people outside our hotel every day as we come home from training at a beer festival. So, yeah, interesting.
I'd love to think that Pardew, if a few of the players didn't ever turn up to that beer festival, he'd be a little bit disappointed.
Yeah. Was it sanctioned you could go and have a beer in the festival?
Well, normally pre-season, if you're away, certainly in my latter stages of my career, it'd be work hard for the week, 2 weeks, whatever you're away. And then last night, all managers probably, I'm not so much sure now, would let you let a bit of steam off, go out on the last night. But this particular occasion, I'm not sure it was just the last night that a few of the boys were frequenting the beer festival.
I just think that's what kind of made those teams that you were in, like the camaraderie, the fact that you would work hard, but you can sneak off, you're socializing with each other.
And it does seem very strange now that would happen. But I know it's 15, 16 years ago, but it was very different then than it is now. There was a big part of that you had to have that side of getting to know new signings that had just joined in the summer. What better way? But also have an enjoyment, maybe have a night or two that you get rewarded for the hard work that you're putting in.
I think that's why that dressing room was so good, though.
Mm.
Like, it was an unbelievable dressing room. Some of the boys, we had characters in there. We had boys who would, you know, would push you in training. But we also had the other side, as Dino says, a great friendship, really, wasn't it? Mm. I suppose. You hear squads that people don't get on sometimes, and it does happen in football. In that squad around that time, used to love coming to training. It was like doing the best job in the world with your best mates. It was just brilliant. Mm. It was an unbelievable time.
Yeah. Dino, you joined West Ham January 2006. And I was saying that you packed so much into that first 6 months. Your debut is away to Arsenal, beating them 3-2. Like, the last defeat handed to Arsenal at Highbury Stadium. I mean, so many memories packed in.
Did you start that game, Dino?
No.
Arsenal?
No. Well, I...
Was that was the game that Saul Campbell got dragged off all the time? Yeah, yeah. I remember Bobby starting.
Yeah, I'd signed, I think, just the week before, and I was unveiled in the Fulham game.
Fulham game, which is Thomas Repka's last
exactly,
night.
And there was two ridiculous goals. Anton's volley and Benayoun chopped about 14 times and then dinked. And I was thinking, wow.
What have I come to here?
And then, obviously, I sit on the bench at Highbury and watch that first half performance where Bobby was outstanding, Nigel was ridiculous in midfield, Matty Everington was brilliant on the left. The whole team, to be fair, I mean... Gab's up against Thierry and just thinking he could outrun him, not a chance. Gab had stupid pace
ridiculous
in the bag if he needed it. I was just like, wow, I ain't going to play. This is a brilliant team I've joined. But it's such a confident team. Such a confident team I joined in terms of the characters, but the role that they were on with Pardew at the helm, it was brilliant.
Yeah. Do you remember that night against Arsenal at Highbury?
I do, because I was sat in the stand. Another one where Pards didn't. He made me travel, but wasn't in the squad. So I do remember it very well, actually. The biggest thing I remember, like I just mentioned, is Bobby Zamora absolutely ripping Saul Campbell to pieces. Mm. And there was a rumour about it at the time. Saul got dragged at half time and got a cab home.
Yeah.
He left. I'm not sure that's a rumour.
I think that's true. I think he left the stadium.
So yeah, it was just, one of those times where we were confident squad. Just signed Dino, signing good, you know, top players. We'd go anywhere and try and win the game. And that night, it was unbelievable. Did we go 3-1 up? And then, I can't remember the way the scoring went that night.
I think they did. And then they got late.
They got a late goal. Yeah. But that was the sort of, that's what we were doing back then. We were going to places, no fear, and going to win the game. And we did. And Dino's mentioned it. Thierry Henry, Saul Campbell, Robbie. That Arsenal team at the time was an absolute joke.
Mm.
So we went there and steamrolled them. And that's what we were doing. That's the confidence we had.
I think in many respects, that debut of yours is the classic Pards performance. It's rock and roll football, like taking on the best, not caring. When you walk into that dressing room, do you remember who stuck out to you as the big characters? Do you remember?
Who didn't?
The list is small to say who wasn't a character.
I mean, Bobby was hilarious, and Anton was great. Ginge, great character. But then you had like experience, like Teddy.
Yeah,
I was like
Christian Daly.
I was in awe of Teddy. You know, like growing
up,
and watching him play and trying to, you know, make my game as close to his as possible. Then get to watch him, and that was one of Pardew's good lines that you had. Teddy Sheringham to mentor you when he was trying to sign me. I was like, I'm in.
Yeah, that'll do. Can you remember Ted in training when the ball wasn't like perfectly to his feet? Not perfectly, but if you sent Ted in, this is the standards of Ted. If the ball was sort of like, you know, he's holding the ball up. If it was sort of bobbled in or it was, you know, 2 foot either side, it wasn't a great pass, he just wouldn't bother going for it. Just because, that's not good enough. And it was just a bit like, oh, okay, this is sort of the level I'm at, Ted. Sorry. I might not be quite at your level, but that's my normal passing, sorry. But having Ted in there, Christian Daly, there was
Nigel, Nigel Iokoko, I mean, very young captain, but very much the captain.
Yeah.
What was Nigel Riocco like? I've met him plenty of times since, and he's not at all like I imagined. And I wondered,
what did you
he's
imagine?
Quite, I don't know, because he's quite outgoing and he's quite funny now and he's quite chatty. And when I would watch West Ham play back in your era, he's very serious. And I couldn't imagine he was a massive laugh to be around.
No, he was. He was both. That's what was so good about it. He was very funny, great with the lads. Sort of that modern player at the time, as I felt the game was changing, he was very much part of that. But then very serious, you know, very serious about training, very serious about the build up to the game, day of the game.
Confident, wasn't he?
Yeah,
as very. In his own ability as a player.
But for someone so young, not afraid to say to one of the...
Was he 20?
Yeah, he was 19 in the FA Cup final. He was the youngest ever captain in an FA Cup final.
Yeah, yeah. And wasn't afraid to say to any of the senior players, if he felt he had something to say, he would say it. And I was like, I wouldn't.
I think he was on the brink of the England. So there was talk of him getting in the England squad at that sort of time. He was brilliant at the time. Yeah, really good.
Tell me about getting mentored by Teddy Sheringham. Was there any pieces of advice that he gave you that really stuck with you?
He was saying that you don't have to run for the sake of running, and that sounds brilliant to me because I didn't want to run.
Perfect.
But what he meant, and when I watched him in training, was that you don't necessarily have to make a darting run, whether it was near post or far post. It could be that you held the position. It could be that you just, rather than making that darting run, it was just a movement to the right or a movement to the left as the defender moves. He was so good at that. When you think of the athletes and the defenders that we had in that squad in training, they struggled to get near him, and he always seemed to just have this little bit of space.
Always had time, didn't he?
Because of his awareness. When the cross was then in, he was free. And his finishing was just like that. It was just so crisp. And yeah, it was just, I took a lot from training and watching him train into my game, and brilliant. I didn't have to run as much.
I've obviously the player, you know, world class Ted. I've never trained or marked someone who stood, like you say, stood still so much, but you couldn't mark him, if that makes sense. Because as a defender, you naturally want to drop to the 6-yard line, see if there's a cross coming in. Ted would just hold his position on the edge of the box. And he was a phenomenal header of the ball as well, wouldn't he? So the ball would come in, and he just always had that time, always had that space. And he was great in the dressing room as well, obviously. You know, he's the age, I think he was 41 when
you think of he just was just lean, absolutely wasn't
he? Never used to do anything though.
Shredded.
He was in the gym.
100 sit-ups, 100 press-ups, out.
Well, I seen him yesterday, and I think he's still doing that, to be fair. He still looks incredible.
Hello,
and he won the golf day yesterday, you know.
That's amazing. Do you know what, in your time at West Ham, the FA Cup run looms large. But you know, West Ham draw Norwich in the third round, and you're at Norwich. But you're injured that day.
Why did you do that?
Is there shenanigans? Is there shenanigans going on there?
You sound like a Norwich fan.
I looked at that and thought, is that a conspiracy?
What round was that? Third round?
Third round, yeah. Away at Carrow Road, third
did
round.
Did I play? Don't know.
I don't know. Yeah,
probably not.
Probably travel.
Yeah, probably travel. Make the team.
No, I would never, I honestly would never do that. I would never not play when there's a chance of, there's a chance of playing. I just wouldn't. Not when I was at that level. I'd spent enough time at Crewe Alexandra and League One to, if there's a chance of playing in the FA Cup against West Ham, I'm going to play. But I was genuinely.
Oh, that's a shame.
I can't.
I was hoping a conspiracy theory.
I was genuinely injured.
Well, look, what a sliding doors moment that would have been. Because if you'd have played that day, would West Ham even be in the FA Cup final?
It's mad when you look back on how those things transpired. Because even if people believe that I wasn't fit when I was, you're not thinking, oh, well, I better miss this game because I want to get to the FA Cup final. You're not expecting that anyway.
It
was just so fortunate. Wait, why are you smiling?
No, it is so fortunate.
You think there's more to this story, isn't
there? Yeah,
I can tell by your face.
I'm laughing at the lies. Like, you almost believe them. What's crazy about your career is, I was just researching it last night, is that you have that injury at 22 years old, like that summer in 2006. But you make your league debut at 16 for Crewe, I think.
Yeah.
You pack so much football into between the ages of 16 and 22. It's absolutely crazy how much stuff you did at such a young age.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously fortunate to have come through an academy that gives young players an opportunity at Crewe, which was amazing. But yeah, when you say it like that, and then I think about it, I actually did have sort of a 9-year career, which is probably about average, I would say. You know, I don't know the facts, but it's probably about average. It's just that mine was from a very young age, and you maybe miss out on that, the learning side of it, and then being at your peak where you've got that experience as a top pro at the top level is probably the main thing I missed out on. But like you say, to have played the amount of games that I did, considering when I got the injury, was I was quite fortunate in that sense.
Do you remember much of your early days at Crewe? 16,
yeah, yeah.
Coming to we were speaking off air there. I was at Cardiff, similar sort of time, Div 2, Div 3 maybe. And I was young. I'd probably be the same age. I mean, 1983. But I was just sort of getting into the Cardiff team, and all the talk, I remember it, Dean Ashton at Crewe. Do you remember learning a lot from your early days in the lower divisions playing for Crewe?
Yeah, oh, definitely. It's a steep learning curve at that level with some of the defenders that you're up against. That you could still, they could probably still dish out way more than you can now. But I think I was lucky because I was this size, well, not this size, but tall and quite a big unit when I was 16. Mm. So physically, I could cope with the demands. But I think I look back on that time and I sort of think I really did burst onto the scene, and it felt very easy. Like I think I scored 7 goals in the league appearances that I made right towards the end of the season. And I thought, well, this is quite easy, and let it go to my head a little bit. And I certainly didn't look after myself the way I should have done. And I think, well, imagine if I had been actually professional and eating right and not gone out and
is that think not, I was a, I think you know. About this all the time, like myself as well. I think the same about myself. Is that not because I was 17, you were 16, because you're so young? I remember playing for Cardiff at 17, speaking to my mates in Newport and half wanting to do what they were doing, like going out and being a young lad at that age. But you can't. You've got to be as professional as you can, but you've still in the, because you're so young in the background, you've still got your mates doing their stuff as teenagers. So it's a weird time, but you wouldn't change that though, you know, would you? The way, like, as in your early, like the Crewe days that you talked about there, as in, I can't imagine unprofessional. You just.
No, but I was just, I didn't push myself. I didn't know what the limits could be for me physically. I'm just talking about physically. Yeah. I think technically, you know, I was so focused. The training I was getting was great. I felt like I was developing that side of it very quickly, but I missed out probably on a couple of years. I was probably at Crewe maybe a year or two longer than I should have been, considering my talent. Mm. But that was because physically I was just a mess because I didn't eat right. Mm. I drank too much on the weekends, considering you had a game on a Tuesday. And so I didn't have any shape to my physique and I wasn't as fit as I should have been. Mm. So those are the small percentages that certainly Premier League managers are looking at. Out of possession, what are you like? They'll have heard about, you know, they do the homework on what you like away from the pitch, and those little things probably cost me maybe a couple of years where I could have been at a higher level because of that.
Do you remember, like Ginge says there, do you remember being a bit of a marked man, like, oh, Dean Ashton and Crewe want to watch?
Oh, I was, for sure.
And was it a case that these kind of grizzled old Division Two defenders are kicking lumps out of you? Is it one of those?
Yeah, I think so. But luckily, I had a great strike partner at the time, Rob Hulse, who was just nails. So he would do most of that. And I actually, even though I was big and I learned to be physical, I didn't want to be. I wanted to be more of a Teddy Sheringham that came. I liked to get involved in the play. I didn't necessarily want to have to be physical. That was something I had to learn as I became sort of 18, 19, 20. I wasn't going to get away with not being physical. So that's something I had to learn to be. I didn't have that in me necessarily, whereas Rob Hulse did, and did most of that when I played alongside him.
I was a centre forward in the early days.
He was.
Yeah. I was, did you know?
You still thought what you were.
Right?
In training every day, he thought he was a centre forward.
What do you mean thought? I generally thought I could play for West Ham centre forward, even though clearly I couldn't.
I remember later.
But one of my one of my scariest memories, I was 16 and it was a pre-season. I played up front for Cardiff against Weymouth in a pre-season friendly. Talking about like big centre arse back in the day. First goal kick came up. I had long, we'll probably talk about the Barnett, stupid Barnett, socks over my knees, thought I was the boy. First goal kick came up. All I heard from behind was killer's ball. The centre half for Weymouth's nickname was Killer. And I thought, oh no. And he hit me with this elbow and I woke up about an hour after the game.
Oh,
it's one of, still one of the scariest things, scariest shouts I've ever heard on a football pitch. Killer's ball. And I've got to go up and challenge for this. Horrendous.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
All right, West Ham fans, one way you can support Ironcast and help us rocket up the charts and beat off the competition from other official football clubs podcasts like Chelsea and like Spurs is to get a 5-star rating or review from you. Support me and Ginger on the podcast, chuck us a 5-star rating and review and help us rocket up the charts where West Ham belong, at the top of the table. Back on with the show.
There's, I mean, so many great moments in that first 6 months, you know, like we touched on. But the first one that really sticks out for me in terms of your individual performance was Man City away in the quarterfinal of the FA Cup. Because you show the full gamut of what your ability is. Like, when I think about your what kind of goals you score, it could be anything. You're good in the air. Your touch is unbelievable. You can dribble. You've got all the skills of a top, top class striker. And on, against that, against City, you demonstrate them all. In, even in that first goal you score that night, you win the header, intricate pass, amazing little bit of skill, and what a finish. What an advert for Dean Ashton.
that first goal especially. I think the technical side is that upbringing from Crewe in terms of so many of the players come through with that technical ability. But then I still can't believe I got a yard on Distan, to be honest. But that, again, I guess that's just quick thinking and quick feet and improvising in the moment. And then I think probably the biggest strength I had was the ability to hit it with both feet pretty much equally as powerful and as accurate. And I think that definitely gave me an edge over a lot of players because I had that ability. And with that strike, you can see it's too powerful at the near post.
It's left
even
foot,
for
isn't
someone,
it?
Yeah, it is. Lefty, yeah. Even for someone like David James, because I had that ability in both feet.
Yeah, you can
3-1
hit
one that night. Was it
2-1?
2-1, was it?
Yeah.
It's interesting, like you're saying there, because it's your ability to, because you can hit with both feet, you can take a shot faster than the goalkeepers expect. I think maybe that's what happens to that City. You create a bit of space for yourself with that unbelievable bit of skill, but then it's the quick fire left foot shot that goalkeeper's not necessarily.
Well, yeah, expect. If I take one more touch, Distan is back and the chance is gone. So I knew I'm going to have to shift this and hit it as quick. But you only do that if you're confident with both feet and being able to hit it in that sense. And
I think if you take the extra touch as well, Jamo probably sets himself a little bit better. And that's what the best finishers do. They hit it so early and the keeper's got no chance.
Your second goal in that game, I don't know if you remember that as well, but Nigel Riococca wins the ball in midfield out to Yossi Benayoun. Great bit of skill and it's crossed into the box for a simple tap-in. And the West Ham fans behind the goal go absolutely insane because they know we've made a semi-final for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, it was. It was incredible. Because of that, it was definitely going to be scored. Type of goal where as a forward, the other players that have created it get more of the plaudits, so I kind of tap it in but have to then go and celebrate with them because they've made it. behind the goal, scenes were amazing. And I think I didn't think about the magnitude of that at the time. Like you say, I'm very young and just getting to know the club, so for me it was just a great night to be part of a team. And when you are a new signing, it's those kind of moments that are really important so that you get the sort of trust from your teammates that, you deserve to have your spot in the team and you're part of the team.
Yeah. Do you know we won 6 of the first 8 games you were involved in for West Ham?
No, I didn't
know. Drawing the other 2.
Really?
Yeah. Did you feel, I don't want to say it's all down to
you. No, he didn't even know that. Like, the fact he's laughing about it.
Sometimes a January signing can really lift a team. And I think that's exactly what happened with you. It gave us a whole new dimension. And did you feel like it kicked everyone on a bit? Do you remember standards?
Well, it did for sure. You sign someone of Dino's quality, it's going to give everyone a lift. But and obviously the great lad he is coming into the dressing room, you know, like we say, Anton, Nigel, we had a great group of young lads. But to sign someone that we had seen scoring goals for Norwich, knowing he was a great lad and a top player, it gave everyone a lift. And I always say it's great to hear, because when you're in that dressing room, every player we signed at that sort of time, even me and Gabs coming into that, it was just a great place to be. Great dressing room to go in. The football was great. The lads were great. Everyone at the club was great. And it was just a great time to be at West Ham. And we were signing players of Dino's quality, which lifts the whole place.
But also, I mean, we obviously laughed about Ginge being in the stands for the Arsenal game, but you actually look at that squad and you couldn't not play well. Because there was, you know, in my position, there was me, Marlon, Teddy Sheringham, Bobby Zamora. Four places for two. You had to be at your best all the time. Same with the centre-backs. I think we had four centre-backs at the time, that you had to be absolutely at peak performance. And that's what I realised straight away when I got there, was I can't not have a good game, or else I'll be...
That's probably why I was in the stand half the time.
One of the highlights of supporting West Ham would be the FA Cup semi-final, Villa Park. Mm. You setting up Marlon's goal. You don't get enough of the credit, so I'm here today to say...
I think he does.
In my own head, anyway. For me, again, you grow up as a kid and you watch the FA Cup and you watch the semi-finals, and Villa Park is iconic for me for that. So for it to be there, I thought was really special. The support was ridiculous. The game wasn't great. It was tense as it would be, and it was always going to take something, and it was special from Marlon, especially his left peg.
Yeah, I think we were all surprised.
But it was just a proper, you know, solid, important performance from the whole team. Defensively, very, very good. Obviously, we took our chance when we had it. Middlesbrough, a good team at the time, but it's semi-finals just about winning, isn't it? I can't imagine what that would have felt like.
A mistake I made late on in that game. I remember they got a chance late on.
You're up against Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, weren't
you? Yeah, and it's sort of, something's happened. I've got caught out of position, and it's played to the right side of Middlesbrough's box, and they should score. I don't know. I've watched it back. He should either cut it or should score. And I remember looking over to Pards, and he was fuming with me. And I'm thinking, how different it could have been, you know? Oh, my God.
I mean, yeah, it was after the game, those scenes were... What were incredible.
That's the last time I got in a communal bath, that was. It was. Remember Villa Park? There was a big old bath at Villa Park at the time. It was all in there, a couple of bottles of champagne.
Did everyone get in the bath?
There was a few of us, isn't
there? Absolutely, yeah.
Sure. There's a picture somewhere of a load of us in the bath after. I love the fact that we just won the FA Cup semi-final, going to Cardiff for me, FA Cup final, and the best thing I remember is the communal bath.
Also, in that game at the end, I go up for a challenge with Mark Schwarzer and I broke his cheekbone as I went up, and it was the World Cup. World Cup summer as well. So he was waiting for me, like, after those celebrations, after the dressing
what,
room.
What, to have a word?
Yeah. Yeah,
no.
He was not happy.
Furious.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
I just had to take it because I'd gone up for the challenge genuinely to try and win the ball, but I'd obviously caught him. Broke his cheekbone and probably
did he
put
miss
him out
the
World Cup. I can't remember, but he was fuming. Took a little bit of the gloss off the celebration.
Did you know he was waiting for you? Or was
no, didn't have a clue,
there?
No.
Oh, man.
No.
This is the first time on Ironcast we're going to talk properly about the FA Cup final 2006. I don't have a problem with watching it back. It's not one of those games I look back on with sadness, because I'm just so proud of the team and everything. You know, we gave such a great account of ourselves, and it's a bit tragic in the way we didn't win. We were so close. But Dino, I wondered what do you remember about the preparation for that game? Because you almost didn't start it, right?
No, I almost didn't. And I'd been playing reasonably well, and then I tweaked my hamstring at West Brom away, I think about 3 weeks before the final, and thought that was it, my chance had gone, and then did everything I could to get fit. You know, oxygen chambers, every, you know, try to do everything I could to be fit. And I trained, I think it was on the Tuesday or the Wednesday prior to the FA Cup final. But obviously, in the meantime, as I said, with the talent that we had, Bobby Zamora had come in, done really, really well. And I think Pards was just really struggling with that decision and went down, looked beautiful place that we stayed in Cardiff. And I think he named the team the night before, every single player except me or Bobby, and just said, I need to sleep on it. I can't decide who to play. I was like, thanks.
Oh, but I was going to say, but that didn't help you, did it?
Yeah, well, you meant to sleep.
Yeah, Pards is sleeping fine, but Dino and Bobby can't get.
So to have that tenseness, I think the next morning was different. When you want to just put the suits and the pictures and go to the game, it kind of definitely added a different dimension for me anyway, going to the game, still not quite sure whether I was going to play.
When did you actually find out? At the ground?
At the ground, yeah. I think I'd gone to the, really? I'd gone to see my family in the stand, said I wasn't still sure, and then went back in and we found out. And I mean, for me, it was, you can talk about the European Cup, but when I grew up, it was the FA Cup. That was the big day. You know, you wake up early and watch it all as a kid, and that was, you know, a massive showpiece final. So to be involved, I felt so bad for Bobby because he was such a top lad and he deserved to play just as much as me. But it is a selfish game, and it was my chance.
Do you think that helped you not knowing? Was you nervous before games? Do you think that would have helped going into such a big game?
I think it probably did, because I just didn't.
You didn't have time to get nervous.
Well, and you sort of think you think you're not going to play, rather than you definitely are going to play. So then there wasn't that much time to think about the actual game, because it was, I know, an hour and a half away.
Yeah, but then you do play 28 minutes. Well, Jamie Carragher scores an own goal, and then on 28 minutes, there you go, Dino.
Yes.
Scoring in an FA Cup final.
Oh yeah.
Scruffy, wasn't it?
Just a bit.
How did it feel to go 2-0 up 28 minutes in?
It was mad. And you know, I think about that goal, and you're right, it was Scruffy, but it epitomizes what it is like as a young player. Every single time, you're just getting told all the time when you don't, follow in. And then you do in the biggest game of your life, and it pays off because it's spilt and you score and you don't care. And that is the picture of me celebrating that. It's the only picture I have in my house of me playing, because as a forward, you practice celebrating, or you think about it. You know, you think what you're going to do. You might have a routine. You might have a set celebration that you might have. But that's just a genuine,
pure emotion
of, this is the FA Cup final. We are 2-0 up against the current European champions, and I've just scored. That picture is the only one in my house, because it's a genuine emotion.
I'm trying to remember what your celebration was. You're not just going to the corner and just fall over on your knees.
No, that was Man City. That was terrible. That was one of those.
That's how I haven't got anything.
Definitely not a fault with the answer.
No, that's a pre routine that didn't work.
Whereas
the FA Cup, I think I just wheeled away with both my hands in the air, and then Conch was the first person I think that came over. But it's all a bit of a blur because it's, I mean, atmosphere as well.
Mm. Oh man,
unbelievable in that stadium.
Yeah, I was there. It was incredible. There's so many sliding doors moments in that game. What are the ones you think about? I think about Gibril Cissé has no right to be scoring that. He's not that good. the second goal that Liverpool, the equaliser that Liverpool score, kind of fine. The Scaloni Gerrard, Marlon missing the chance.
The Cissé goal, the time they scored. I think if we go in just before half time, wasn't it? I think if we go in at half time 2-0 up, I think it might have been a different outcome.
Do you think?
It's just one of those things as a player and momentum and stuff like that going in. If you're 2-0 up, you know, they've just scored at half time. It's probably a slightly different conversation. I think that was a big moment in the game.
Do you know, is what you just mentioned, that Liverpool European champions at the time. It'd been a year since Istanbul. I wondered, was it on our minds? Do you think it was it on the players' minds, like, they're comeback kings when it really matters? Or did it not even?
I just think they were an unbelievable team. That's more what mattered, is that you go across their team and they had just quality throughout it. And because they were current European champions, you know, they've got the mindset to get over the line in such a big game. But I think as players, I don't know what Ginge thinks, but you are quite selfish in the way you think. So I don't necessarily think about those other things you just talked about. I think about the really small things to do with myself. So my job was to get close to Xavi Alonso when they had the ball. And Xavi Alonso dropped into a more forward position and Gerrard dropped into that position. And that was my job to then get across to him before he plays the pass to Cissé. But I'm just too tired at the end of that half to properly get there. So when I watch it back, I think you should have made that effort. And then I get beat for Peter Crouch comes over the top of me to head it down for Gerrard to score. And you think those moments where I maybe could have done,
I think as players
you're
always
it.
Like nobody else would notice that.
No, exactly.
Yourself,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, as a player, that's the sort of things. And I think all players, I obviously know a lot of boys. I think we are our own biggest critics, if you like. You know, this stuff that fans wouldn't see, but when you watch it back, say you went back and watched Match of the Day or whatever, you pick up little things and went, oh, if I'd done this, if I'd done that. But I think that's just the mind of a footballer.
Yeah. And now Lionel Scaloni has won the World Cup for Argentina. So
still feel sick when I hear that name.
Do you watch Argentina win the World Cup and think, that's the same Lionel Scaloni who's given the ball to Gerrard in the FA Cup final?
The funny thing is, he is the person that fans want to talk about. Yeah. With that, when you talk about the final, that is what they talk about, is that he cleared it or didn't clear it. But he didn't clear it straight to Gerrard.
No.
He cleared
no,
it,
no.
Then they played it in,
played
then
it, in,
was
then
headed
it was
out,
headed down,
and
it?
Then Gerrard has done something that
he's only
no one
hit
else
it
has done.
He can't move.
Yeah, he said in his book, he was just
did he say
so,
it in his book?
He said in his book, he's so
tired. They were
tired.
All getting cramped, weren't they? Late doors, Carroll had gone down, Stevie G had gone down, and I generally think he's took a touch and
yeah,
he's getting cramped
he's got
tired.
Left.
He's got nothing left, he's hit it. And that's probably because nobody, Xhaka wasn't expecting the shot. That's probably why it's gone in, because he's just hit it.
It's just the most ridiculous goal when you watch it back. Yeah. It's just, and he was a special player. And so sometimes you just got to hold your hands up and go, it's one of those things.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Make sure you're a part of our new European journey. Limited tickets are remaining for our UEFA Europa League match with Olympiacos. Adult tickets start at just £35 with kids starting at £15. To buy, head to eticketing.co.uk/WHUFC. So, I mean, now we get to summer of 2006, you get called up for England and this is when the injury happens, 22 years of age. And it, like I say, it's mad how much has happened in your career. And I kind of forgot how young you were when this happens.
Yeah.
And so you spend the following, so you don't play again the second season. And again, so many sliding doors moments. We were talking about, you know, if you're playing for England, do England make you Euro 2008? And if you're still in this West Ham team, do we even get Tevez? Do we have the great escape? So much could be different. But I wondered, what was it like for you, that having to sit on the sidelines watching the Great Escape, that's 2006-07 season after the FA Cup?
Excruciating, to be honest. It's every player's worst nightmare is having to sit in the physio room and look out the window at your teammates training, have that little influx at about 9:30 where the players all come in to get their strappings done and you hear the jokes and taking the mickey out of people and those sort, and then they disappear and it goes silent again for the next 2 hours. It's just excruciating every day. And if you then repeat that for 13, 14 months, it's very, very difficult. And you know, of course the fans are great with you, but obviously the first thing they ask you is, when are you back? When are you back? And you've got to deal with that knowing I'm not going to be back anytime soon. And you've just got to watch the team knowing you can't affect it. Try and be as positive as you can, even though inside you're crushed. It's such a difficult place to be. And
did you find it quite lonely? It's quite a lonely time. I did my knee and was out for 12 months, but did you find it quite a lonely time?
Yeah, I did.
You almost feel like you've forgotten about it a bit, didn't
absolutely,
you?
Absolutely,
yeah. You know, in the manager's eyes, if you're not fit, you're sort of, you're nowhere. You're sort of
It made
doing
me
your
realise
own
just how all the focus is on the next game. And if you're just not part of that, then you know, it's you're kind of an irrelevance in just a really ruthless football way. I'm not saying that people didn't, and the manager didn't come and speak to me, but in those moments where you're into, especially with the way the club was and struggling, everything was pretty tense, and you are just, unless you're involved, you just kind of forgotten about. And also players are great, but also you're in a situation that they all don't want to be in. So it's not like they are desperate to come in and sit with you for half an hour, because it's the physio room is a place where you don't want to be in there. So you have to just, I think, go inwardly with the other injured players and the physios and just get your head down on focusing on trying to get back.
Yeah. What was the original injury, and what did rehab look like? What were you having to
do? So obviously I broke my ankle the day before I was meant to make my England debut, which was at Old Trafford. And when it happened, I just remember obviously in excruciating pain, shouting out, thinking that's my England chance gone. You know, when you get a moment like that, you think that's my England chance gone. Nothing, this is my career ended. Nothing like that. Just this is my England chance gone. And I held it together until I got into the dressing room at Old Trafford. And then I was just uncontrollable in terms of upset, because I thought this chance had gone.
Was it on Old Trafford, with the pitch at Old Trafford?
At Old Trafford, yeah. Wow. And you know, you've got the thought of that, you've just done all the pre-season, you're so excited to start the season with West Ham, you're about to make your England debut, and you break your ankle. That was all a bit too much for me in that dressing room. But then you sort of think, oh, well, I broke my ankle, okay, what are the realities? Well, probably 3-4 months, I could be back before Christmas, maybe, or around Christmas time. Okay, we'll deal with that. But then I was just, the way I broke my ankle was quite unique, and it just did so much damage within the joint. Once that reality started to kick in after the first op and a few months down the line, then it was like, oh, it's definitely not going to be 3 or 4 months. This is going to be a proper long-term project because of the damage.
Were you told told instantly how bad it was?
No.
As in, like, after the first op, did someone sit you down and say, like, this isn't quite as straightforward as what we think it is?
Or no, I mean, they felt as if they could operate and put it back into a place. And then I guess it's then your own body and how that's going to react, and not to go into the deep detail of it, but it's where, how much scar tissue you get. I'm very, you know, in terms of my joints and muscle, I'm quite a stiff player. So it's not like I had supple joints anyway. So then to get movement back in a joint that's already quite stiff was the real challenge. It was getting that movement back, and it never really did get back, but I got back to a level that was enough to get me playing again.
Yeah. So over that 2006-07 season, were you going to games? Like, were you still coming to Upton Park?
I did to start with, and then I couldn't. So I to start with, I was all for it and support the team, and then it just became, and again, it's not the fans' fault, but to go and then have thousands of people say, when are you back? When I was finding that a bit difficult to then go home and be quite down about it, and when you've got to try and be positive about getting fit. So I stopped going. I felt bad about that because I wasn't even part of the Great Escape, because I was not there, and I hadn't gone to games, and I wasn't at Old Trafford, and I just watched it. I was obviously absolutely delighted for all the players and the club, but I just felt like I had to get myself away to deal with it myself. It was the only way I was going to be able to cope, I think, to get back
mentally
and be in the right... mentally, to be in the right frame of mind to then hopefully start that next pre-season.
Yeah, and you did. You came back. So at what point did you know you were close? Was it towards the end of that 06-07 season? Did you have a fixed timeline at a certain point?
Yeah, so I'd been on the grass at that point. I'd done quite a bit of running, and the running was leading up to pre-season. So I was then super fit, ready for the pre-season, and started that pre-season and felt quite good. But I think with any player that gets a really big injury, I think it's hard to understand that it probably takes something from everybody, like an aspect. So for me, because my ankle was so stiff, talked about me having a great ability with both feet, I then could not strike the ball with my left, as in I couldn't flex my ankle to strike it with my laces anymore. So I had to curl every shot, with my left. I couldn't strike it because it just wasn't supple enough to do that. And you have a favoured leg that you jump off as a player. And I felt like I was really good in the air because of that leap. And that was my left. So I then couldn't jump off my left anymore because I just didn't have the power and the flexibility in my ankle. So I had to jump two-footed. So I was constantly fighting with the defenders. So those, again, are things that you're trying to deal with behind the scenes. Even though you're back and you're playing, you think, I'm not quite the same and I've got to try and adapt. And
nobody else knows that apart from you as well. You're not going to go to the manager. I'm not the same.
You're not.
You're certainly not. Yeah, and like mentally, that must be really tough to deal with. But I was just so
pleased to be back in training.
I can't believe we've sat down here and I said, that 2007-2008 season, you were top scorer and you didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
Not only did you come back, you were our best striker. You scored the most goals.
But I know that in my head, I felt like I didn't start as many games as I maybe thought in my head I should have done. But then again, I was coming back from a big injury. The team was changing under a new manager. The style, sometimes playing with one up front, things were different. But in my head, I feel like I didn't play that much. But I obviously still scored 12 goals.
Well, you said the Kerbs didn't fancy you at first, that you had to kind of really work your way into the team.
Yeah, I did, yeah. And he said as much in terms of, I think from what he wanted from a centre forward was, and I wasn't great at this, and I think I'd have struggled now in a team that plays one up, is that I didn't want to run the channels. It wasn't my strength. I wasn't someone that necessarily ran in behind. My game was mainly back to goal or on the side in that just off the front type. That was me more so. And I think he wanted the players that were going to stretch the pitch a bit more and give defenders a bit more of a headache going towards their own goal. And so it took me a while. And I don't think he felt like I was quite right because I still had a tiny bit of a limp when I was running. I don't think I looked smooth, especially when I was tiring. I think I looked like I had a bit of a limp, but that was gradually getting better as my ankle was getting better.
Yeah. And you scored one of the best goals of your career away at Old Trafford that season, I think it was.
Yeah.
Overhead kick at the Stretford end.
Yeah. I mean, special.
Absolute worldie.
Yeah, special.
Best goal? Got to be, isn't it?
Has to be, yeah. Yeah. I think to do it at Old Trafford, in a setting like that against a team, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson team with the players that they had at the time. And I there was a lot of people in the stadium that I knew from school because it wasn't that far from where I grew up. That was special. We were 3-0 down at the time.
So
when you look at my celebration, it was a bit of a...
bit muted.
Yeah, I really want to go mad here, but I can't because, I mean, they had Rooney, Ronaldo and Tevez as their front three. They had such a good team, but something I can look back on, definitely.
The only goal that comes close, we mentioned at the start, was the Mark Noble testimonial volley. Was that no red kick or is it more sideways?
No, it's overhead kick, wasn't it?
Sideways.
I'm trying to remember it back. It's been a while.
It's a full-blown overhead kick, worldy.
What's great as well is you brought in your shirt you wore that day and it's still got a bit of mud on it, which is great to see. Love that. So the next season, Gianfranco Zola, and is it right, the injury reoccurred in his first training session?
So basically with the way my ankle had broken and the damage that was done to the surface, it meant, unbeknown to me, during that season, I'd obviously chipped a tiny bit of bone off at some point. And so in that first training session, it had just obviously, that tiny fragment had got right in between the joint and just seized up in his first. Up to that point, I had actually felt, I think I'd started with two goals against Wigan on the opening day.
That's right. Yeah.
And then I was fine in every aspect of the game, other than if I had to go back to defend a corner and you do like a stride from the centre forward position back to your own box, I thought, that just doesn't feel right. It feels a bit strange when I was doing that particular run. And the same then when I'd then run back up. It was almost like a half stride. I thought that just doesn't feel right.
And that was during the Wigan game?
That was during the Wigan game. And then during the next, I think I played another six games. And I just kept feeling that. And then obviously in that training session, then it got caught. And that's what it was. It was obviously when I did that run, it was possibly getting close to the joint, that little fragment. So then once I did that, I just thought, so typical when it's first session of a new manager. And again, I didn't think at that point it was the end. I just knew that it meant another operation, and it would be a big setback.
So what was the approach after that? Try and get the fragment out?
Yeah, you just go straight in, have an operation to take that out and clean it all out, and then start the rehab process, which again
is... And then what was the timescale on that second op? Can you remember?
I think it was only 4 weeks, I think, because it's just a clear out and it should be... but it just... That was then to be a recurring theme of these fragments just chipping off because there just wasn't any... There was no cartilage there. It's like I had a massively arthritic ankle at that point, so...
And it's just bone on bone, and every time you're...
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah. And what you mentioned... When did you know it was the end? Was there one particular training session where it was clear this isn't going to work?
I think I'd obviously had another couple of operations to remove fragments. And then I definitely had a period where I thought, oh, it feels better. Like it genuinely feels like I could be getting back. And then I did get back and was out and had run on the grass and done everything I should do, ready to leading up to try and train. Maybe not 100%, but I thought I've done enough running to want to join in and it's like a bonus as well. It's like to be able to go out with the players and start a training session. And then we just normally have a jog around the pitch on the before we then actually start the proper warm up, where the lads will have a chat and just even running round. I could hear this clicking noise, and I know Kieran Dyer was like, "Is that?"
I remember it.
Yeah, your new boots. I was like, no, that's my ankle.
So I remember that conversation about like, thought you had new boots, and they were rubbing, and it was Dino's ankle.
Yeah,
in that session,
it was just clicking, and then I then couldn't start the warm up, and then that was when I knew that this was the end. And I got quite upset, but Scott Parker came over and went, "Dino, not here. Come on."
I should remember it.
It's Scott Parker saying, "Not here." It doesn't.
I think he was trying to protect me.
Captain, just, and I don't know if the session was being filmed or what. Yeah. But I think he just sort of. But at that point, you just know that it's not probably going to be.
Do you remember the afternoon after that? The days after that, did you think that you knew that was it?
Well, I think that the days after that is I know I've got to have another operation straight away. If I'm going to carry on, it's going to be another operation, back to square one, back to the starting point again, which is just once you know it's going to happen again, that is the dread of the rehab. So it was with the retirement side of it. In the end, it was such a relief to retire. I can't imagine that.
Yeah.
Because when you're 25 years old and you can't get up in the morning and just walk downstairs, it takes you 20 minutes to get from your bed downstairs because you've got to let the ankle kind of loosen to a point where you can walk properly down the stairs. And you can't go to the shops with your family. You have to sit down after 10 minutes and let them carry on. And then they come back to you and then you can do another 10 minutes. And you think, I'm 25 years old and I can't do the simple things as your kids are starting to grow up. How am I going to then go and in the garden and play
rest of your life?
What am I going to do for the rest of my life? I can't do these small things. It became a relief to think, finally, I don't have to have another.
Did you make the decision, Dino? Did you call it a day, or were you advised?
No, I'd have tried to go through it again and had the operation again. But a surgeon in Holland was like, if you want a reasonable life going forward for the rest of your life to be able to walk properly and have some time with your kids, he said, now is probably the time you have to make that decision. And that was probably the best thing, that someone gave you that real reality check of what was going to happen if you thought you could carry on.
Yeah, it's a mad to say. I was thinking earlier, there's not many players of your generation who went through something like that. I can't think of many players who were a bigger name as you that had to retire young. You're probably the only one I can really think of.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there is a few that had that potential and had it sort of snatched away. But it was obviously very difficult. I'm just very, very unfortunate that it happened to be me and at that time. But then again, I've got to look at how fortunate I was that I actually got to I actually got to do it and
scored an FA Cup final.
Exactly, and got to experience the things I did because I started young.
Did you struggle after it, Dino? I had a bit of a personal question. How was it after that? You know, the next year and a half, 2 years? Was it
mind-numbingly difficult?
Yeah, I can imagine.
Just where do you start? I mean, where do I start in terms of how hard it is? It's sort of, I mean, you know how hard it is anyway, the sacrifice you have to make to be a player. But again, what maybe people forget is it's our dream. Like it's not a job. How is this our life that we get to just have our dream to play in front of this amount of people every week, with the support that you get, the accolades that come with it, the lifestyle. It's everything you dream about. And when you just get there and then it's taken away, it's really, really difficult to handle. And I think because of the injury side of it and the pain I was in at the time, that was the relief. But I think there's lots of things that maybe people don't maybe realize is when you retire is I felt really guilty. I felt really guilty for other people. So I felt really guilty for my family that I wasn't going to be able to continue and maybe give them the life that I thought I was going to do. I felt really guilty for my grandparents who came every weekend or every away game. That was their weekend that they would come and watch me, and I couldn't give them that anymore. That was finished for them. And things like when you financially obviously doing well, you look after your family. So you might retire your parents. You might buy a property for someone within your family. And all of a sudden you're having to change those things. I think people don't maybe, and you earn great money. So, you have that, of course. But I just felt really guilty for all these people.
Wow.
Even though it was me who was having to go through it, ultimately, I felt quite guilty. I felt quite guilty for the supporters, for the club that had paid big money for me and I couldn't repay that, for the supporters that wanted to see me and I couldn't then fulfill that. So I had quite a bit of guilt. And then you have the bitterness of, and I think it's normal, absolutely normal to be bitter. Why is it me? Why has that player got to have a full career? Why is it me that's missing out? And I think they're all normal feelings to have, but they're feelings you have to deal with. And only over time do you kind of get over that. But I'm really, really good at keeping a check with reality in that, you know, football is a fantasy. It's not real. It's just not real. The whole lifestyle is just obscenely great. And it's just not real. Real life is with your family, the things that you can enjoy at home, holidays. Though that's the actual reality. Football is just a fantasy. And I've tried to always keep the two separate.
Is it easier now to look back? Because you're at an age where you would have retired had you had a longer career. And you're left with amazing memories and the love from West Ham fans. Do you find it easier these days?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And I'm so fortunate to have another career that I absolutely love and still to be part of football, because that love obviously waned quite a bit after having to retire, but that's obviously back again. And I love the sport and love being involved. Very fortunate to have another career that involves football. And yeah, as you get older, you sort of, it was never going to last forever anyway. You were going to have to retire at some point. And when you look, I had, you know, sort of 9 great years of playing where there's friends that never got that opportunity. So it's really nice now to look back and be proud of the times you played, the big days you had, teams you were in, people you got to meet. That's great then when you can look back on it all.
Yeah. You created memories that will last forever. Like West Ham fans will never forget the way you made them feel. And that's a special thing. I want to end on some quick fire questions. Okay. Yeah. Don't want you to think
everyone
about
it. Everyone always looks a bit nervous about this.
Don't want you to calm down.
We're going to lift the mood.
Well, I mean, yeah, it does.
I was just totally engrossed in it.
Yeah, I was totally engrossed.
I've never really spoken to you about it, Dino. You know, it's obviously not an easy thing to speak about, you know, and it's fascinating to listen to what you had to go through personally, you know, on your own, I suppose, as well. A lot of the time, it's an incredible thing, sad thing that happened to you. But the way you've dealt with it is incredible. It really is.
Yeah, also like the things you were saying about, you kind of forget you're Dean Ashton the footballer to a lot of people, but being able to walk around with your kids and things like that, things, sacrifices that people don't even think about. It's a hell of a story. But back to the quick fire question.
Yes.
Let's get off.
You're not getting away with them.
No.
I'm going to ask you some quick fire questions. Just the first name that comes out of your head.
Okay.
Funniest ex-teammate.
Bobby Zamora, I just sit back.
Straight off the bat.
I would
in the dressing room and just listen and laugh. So, so funny.
He's relentless, isn't he?
Yeah, like, brilliant.
I can imagine he's not afraid to take the mickey out of.
Still exactly the same now as well.
Do you do much punditry with Bobby?
I don't actually, no. No. I hate the fact that we had to be like rivals almost in a way for the same position. But I just sit back and listen to him in the dressing room. He's brilliant.
Worst timekeeping of someone at West Ham that you played with?
Ooh, that is a tough one.
That is a tough one.
Well, I know my answer, but I can't work out if you played with Carton Cole, did you?
Yeah, I did.
Did you?
Sorry, yeah, of course.
Surely everyone that's in that squad. Actually, no, it's not that very hard difficult, a question when you actually think about
Coley.
It.
Coley. Yeah, Coley.
Favourite film?
Man on Fire. I watched it actually 2 nights ago. Oh, Denzel. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Right. Unbelievable.
Classic.
Unbelievable.
Best manager across your career?
I loved Alan Pardew. The most attacking manager ever. And got the balance on the pitch,
spot on,
off the
it?
Pitch. Just, I loved it.
Yeah. Final question. Best memory in a West Ham shirt?
I'm actually going to say the Mark Noble testimonial. I'm going to say that because for a number of reasons. One, the whole, it was still at Upton Park. Secondly, it was in front of a whole stadium full of West Ham fans. It gave me a chance, because I hadn't really, to sort of not say goodbye, but just sort of don't forget me.
Yeah.
And to do it on a day for Nobes, who's such a top fella and top player.
And the goal.
You haven't even mentioned the goal.
I know, yeah. I'll quickly tell this. But the night before, I was in Centre Parks with friends in Nottingham. I had a really bad back, a little bit too much to drink. And I said to my wife, I said, because my back was really sore, I said, I could really do without this. I'm going to get there. I'm going to be on the bench. They've got these new shirts. They're like really tight. I'm like, well, I'm not looking great. I could do without this. She went, no, come on. It's for Mark Noble. All the lads will be there. It'll be a fate. Oh, okay. Wake up the next morning. Go on then, we'll go. So we drive down. We get there a little bit late. I go in. I am on the bench, obviously, because they're going to put Paolo and Bellamy and Teddy and all those guys on. I'm sort of sitting on there thinking, God's sake, I have to come on. I'm out of shape. I can't run. Anyway, I come on. The first thing I do, I don't really remember, someone crosses it in. And I basically fall over and it hits me like in the stomach from about 2 yards out. And I'm thinking, this is why I didn't want to come. And then obviously that happens, the goal. And the noise, I watch it back, the noise is different to any other goal I've ever scored. It's such a unique noise, like a sort of shocked cheer.
A shock. do you think it was, because people might have been thinking, I'm not saying it, oh, he's not maybe looking his best. How was he actually just like that?
It was probably some kids saying to their parents, who's that? Who's that guy?
Where's the kit man playing?
Anyway, the ball comes over and I think, sod it.
I'll go for it.
Because this could look stupid, but sod it, I'll go for it. And it works and it happens. And I just think my kids never got to see me play. So they just think, if I tell them I played against Ronaldo and played with this player and that player, and they just laugh and go, yeah, okay. And they actually got to see and hear the crowd sing my name, and it's just really special that day because of those little moments that I got. And then to have the amount of, you know, gifts and memes of just like, you know, when I'd hit the floor, you know, the amount of whales coming out of the water and hitting the, which was just
doing
the next
yourself
day.
A bit of an injustice. No,
it's incredible.
Even the commentator at the time, Peter Drury, says, I think he says something like, well, that's given the Upton Park pitch the last ever heavy roller. Absolutely.
Absolutely opens you up.
Dear.
But I can tell that the way you're talking about it, like there's a smile on your face. So it's a great
memory. It is, yeah. I'm so, so glad I went.
Oh, man. Incredible memories. And you saved the best till last. thank you so much. Thank you for joining us on Ironcast. What a man. Dean Ashton.
Dino, brilliant, mate. Pleasure. Brilliant.
Sports Social Podcast Network.